Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
For the best in morning radio, tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Monday, September 8th, and we're finally back with you.
Good morning. I've missed the music.
Yeah,
I miss being here. It feels like so long.
So the mornings haven't been quite that the same for you without the music.
No, they haven't.
The
not at all.
So you were gone for three days last week.
Yeah.
And we had a holiday also, and one day I checked out, so you weren't here all week last week.
No.
Yeah. And so you had fun. You went out of town.
Yeah, it was a crazy week.
It was a crazy week for you. So tell us about it a little bit.
Well, on Tuesday, Monday was obviously the holiday. The weekend before, I was in San Diego. Mm. Then the Monday back here. Tuesday got into a big car accident.
Wow.
I was sat at a red light, and two people T-boned in front of me and came straight into my car. My front bumper came off, was like 5 feet away from my car. My airbag blew out. It was just a nightmare.
Were you moving or you stopped?
No, I was stopped.
You were stopped and the airbag still came out?
Yeah.
Huh? Wow,
yeah.
That's interesting.
It was a bad accident.
Wow.
What a
pain in the ass to just be sitting there innocently.
I know.
You know?
Talk about bad luck. My luck right now is just not...
Really?
Wow. It's just not going well for me. But it's just so annoying. I mean, I was sat at a red light.
Yeah.
And it happened. I was like,
are you kidding me? I know. How much worse can it be, right?
I know.
I mean, you avoid all these accidents and stuff and they come to you.
Yeah, but it was really scary. I mean, one guy was turning left to the road that I was... stopped on.
Right.
Someone else drove right into him. I don't know if the guy that was turning was just turning too fast, didn't think there was enough, thought there was more space than there was. And then, so he got hit from both sides because he got hit by somebody and then that brought them into me.
Wow.
So he got a double whammy, but I mean, the fire truck was there, like, sawing
his
door off.
Wow.
He got taken away in an ambulance. It was really scary.
That's pretty bad, man. Wow.
Yeah, it was a really bad accident. And my car's undrivable, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow,
and then
so
going out
bad.
Of town right after that,
uh-huh.
It's just been, I mean.
Crazy.
Thankfully, I wasn't really hurt.
Right.
I don't know if my finger was broken or, I mean, my fingers caught the airbag.
Right.
So that saved my face.
Right.
But that hurt my fingers, but I mean,
right. Well, don't talk about it too much on the air because they might need some testimony.
I've already gone through it all. But then going out of town was, I guess, it was a good getaway. But,
yeah.
But boy,
a little break.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was in Washington State for a wedding this weekend,
which was nice.
That was fun seeing.
Where? What city was it? Is it a small town or something?
Spokane.
Oh, Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's, I think it's about an hour from Seattle.
Seattle.
Okay. And I think it's only like 30 minutes from Idaho.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's super close to the border, but it's really pretty up there. Really?
Really?
Yeah, really nice. It reminded me a lot of England.
Oh, really? Yeah, because it rains a lot. It's green.
Yeah, it's green, and there was a lot of bridges and rivers, and it was just pretty. It was a really pretty place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. We have no rivers here. You know, we have the LA River, which doesn't look like a river at all.
Yeah.
More like a sewage.
Completely. Yeah, there's not much free water around here.
No, not really. Not really. Yesterday it was pouring like San Bernardino and stuff. I don't know if you saw that. It was flooded. It was flooded and cars were covered to the top in water.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is. So we've had some crazy storms here because of the heat, I think.
Well, it's interesting because I was in Santa Barbara on Wednesday, and it's so green there.
Mm.
And to say the whole of Southern California is in a drought, you would not think.
Right.
I mean, LA is not green.
Right.
It's all the mountains, the hills, whatever they are brown.
Right.
Because there's no water. There's nothing to water them. But
that's
then when you go to Santa Barbara, it's green.
Yeah.
It looks nice and... I was shocked that they're in a drought as well as us, but they still look the land still looks so nice there.
That's true. Well, it depends, I guess, what kind of what area you go to and stuff, you know, because some areas do get more rain.
Yeah,
and you know, I mean, considering we have a drought here, I think LA is pretty green, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I moved here from Vegas. There's no green in Vegas at all. It's all brown with sandstorms to cap mm-hmm. that with. So there you go, you know? And wow. So you were all over the place, huh?
All over the place.
Yeah, you've become quite the traveler.
And then this weekend.
All these weddings that she has to go to.
Friday night, I go to Arizona for another wedding.
Really? Oh, my God.
It's two couples of friends. Last week, it was one of the weddings, and we were all together. And then next weekend, it's the other, and we'll all be together again.
Right. But, I mean, those are quite distances to go to a wedding, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you guys are pretty dedicated
and
to those weddings.
And the two guys are both from L.A.
Oh, really?
They chose to... It's the females that got to choose where they're from.
Where they live.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, Spokane and Arizona.
Wow.
And on the way back from Spokane, our layover was in Phoenix. So, like, great.
Really?
We'll be here in
so you overshot
five
L.A.
days.
And then you have to come back.
Yeah, seriously.
I know. I hate that.
That's what I don't understand about... layovers, so often you are flying so much further.
Right, but it's because of the hubs and stuff, you
right.
know. They have like airports where they have a lot of planes, so that's where they're centered from.
Yeah, I guess Phoenix is the hub of Southwest.
Probably, yeah.
And there's two gates or two terminals.
Two terminals, terminals yeah. for them, yeah.
Full of Southwest.
Right. So, yeah, they pretty much own the South, I mean, you know. Yeah. This area here, Southwest,
right.
Southwest, they own it.
Yeah, I mean, and when you sit on the beach down where I live, you can just see the Southwest planes because they're the obvious ones because they're blue and red.
Right.
And most of the planes are just white.
Right.
And you can just tell it's like every 20 minutes, another Southwest. It's
wow.
like, oh my God, there are so many planes.
That's true. So they fly from LAX too because I thought they're
yeah.
only from Burbank.
No,
stuff.
They're from LAX.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So they've expanded probably or something. But
yeah, they're out of LAX.
Yeah.
So many of
them.
They
used to be like, before they came around, there was PSA, you know, Pacific Southwest Airlines or something. And they used to have like smiling planes. They'd put a smile on them. That's how you recognize them, you know. Like Amazon has a smile.
Yeah.
It was the same thing. So I remember that. It used to be the same kind of airline, you know, cheap and
right.
and flying short distances in smaller airports and stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
I didn't realize that Southwest is a heart logo. On one of the...
Oh, a heart logo?
Yeah, on one of the planes we sat on, we were very front, and it's like heart with wings.
Oh, okay.
That's kind of their logo. I was like, huh, I've never noticed that there's a heart in their logo before.
Yeah. I guess you learn something
yeah.
new every day, right? So you're okay. You're in one piece, and I'm glad about that. You
Thankfully.
Know? And, yeah.
I got out lucky.
Yes, you did. Very lucky,
yeah.
you know, because, I mean, these things, it's like you never know... You never know. I mean, obviously, in your case, it's like you sit there peacefully and probably thinking of something else and
right.
all that, and suddenly, bam, you know?
I know. Wow. You don't think about it. And since then, I've been driving. It's like every time I go over an intersection, I'm like, oh, my God, is someone coming?
Right.
It's made
I know.
Me so scared. But I guess a lot more aware, so that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, I'm a pretty aware driver. I mean, both hands were on the wheel when I was sat at the red light. That's the kind of driver I am.
Okay, well, you know. So, and that's too bad because your car is pretty new, right? I mean, you
yeah.
got it when you came here and
yeah.
stuff. Wow, that's
yeah,
a pain.
Yeah, so my car's,
yeah.
car's in the shop for a while.
Oh, God. So did you finally get your rental today? I mean, how
no,
did you get here?
No, I haven't.
You had to be
I'm
dropped
in my,
off?
I'm in my boyfriend's car right
oh,
now.
Oh, I see.
Thankfully,
okay.
he's very patient.
Yeah, obviously.
Said, I'm not usually this unlucky.
But, yeah, what kind of a girlfriend? You're becoming a pain in the ass.
I know.
You know?
I know. I really am.
I'm just kidding. Relax.
No, I think he's thinking that. The past couple of weeks, I think he's like, oh, my God. But yeah, so I'm in his car right now.
Okay,
hopefully
cool.
later today I'll be able to get a rental.
Cool.
Get that figured out.
Yeah. I know. Well, my son came into town for the weekend to pick up his car, which he wrecked. And it was finally fixed, so he came into town and from San Francisco. So we had some fun yesterday.
That's nice.
And
did he drive it back
yeah.
up?
Yeah, he. In yeah. fact, this morning he's driving there right now. In fact, and he's going to get there this afternoon. So anyway, there's a lot to talk about, but we have a special guest in the studio that I don't want to let him sit anymore because he's just eager to talk. This man has to be talking nonstop. We have Mr. Rich Tola in the studio. Welcome to the show, Rich.
Oh, thank you, Sam. Charlotte, how are you? Nice to meet you.
And Rich is a longtime friend of the station. You were here a couple of years ago, was it?
Two years ago this month, I believe.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I can actually do a search real quick and our website, but I believe you, you know. So
well, I got back on August 4th, and I think it was either the end of August or September, soon thereafter.
Oh, wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so you were a guest on the show, and then you decided you need to be in radio because you like to talk, you have a lot of opinions, you have a lot to say, and you have a great accent, and, you know, he's from, obviously, the East Coast and stuff. You haven't heard him talk yet, but wait.
Wait till I get going. I can't stop.
But, so Rich has a new show called Tola Talks, and that's on at noon on Channel 2, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. An amazing show, I got to tell you, you know, because we run replays at night of your show and stuff. So when I go to bed 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, I kind of listen to it before I go to bed. And I can't stop. I couldn't shut it off, you know. I mean, you're like there. You go 50 miles an hour, but it's good. You cover a lot of stuff.
You cover a lot of ground. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So let's find out a little bit about you and stuff. And you're originally, obviously, from the East Coast. Where are you originally from?
I grew up in Trenton, New Jersey.
In New Jersey. Okay.
Yeah, not too far from, well, everybody knows Trenton down there. Shout out to my my peeps there.
Oh, okay, cool. Because you mentioned something to someone about Philly, and I thought maybe you're from there, but the accent is definitely New York, right?
Well, I think it's across Philly, New York. Mm-hmm. I mean, I spent a lot of my years, younger years, in Philadelphia. Went to school at the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. So Philly, Trenton, it's maybe about 40 miles or so. New York is probably about 60.
Yeah.
So we're sort of partway between the two. But
well, do you think there's close to everything, right?
Everything's close. You got the highways there, the turnpike, right? What
right.
exit?
I mean, Philadelphia, New Jersey, New York, who cares? It's all the same, right?
Right. So Philly was my old stomping grounds. Loved it there, 70s, 80s, and then sort of made my way to New York in the 90s. I spent 12 years in New York City before moving here. Been here about 7 years now.
But what did you do before you moved to New York? What were you into then? You went to college, right?
I went to school, University of Pennsylvania Wharton, and then I got out. My first Wall Street stint was in Philadelphia for Goldman Sachs.
So you went to school, what, for finance?
For finance, correct.
Okay, and at the time it was like the thing to do, right?
That was the thing. I mean
there was so much 80s. Money. Yeah, 80s.
It was all about, remember Wall Street from the 80s? It was all about Wall Street.
Right.
Wall Street was the place to be. So I came out and landed in, well, it was actually Philadelphia office of Goldman Sachs. And I spent a couple years there before going back to graduate school. Went to Northwestern. In the Chicago area.
Wow. So you're no street kid here. I mean.
Well, you know, that was sort of the times. The times, it was all finance. Everything was, it was big finance, Wall Street. And that was sort of the journey. I think if you wanted to be a real player on the street, be an institutional salesman, they sort of desired you to go back and get the MBA.
The MBA, right. And I remember it very clearly because they used to write about it and everything, how everybody right out of school, they would go get their MBAs, get hired in Wall Street for like $500,000 a year, the first year or something, with all these bonuses and everything. I don't blame you for doing the same, you know?
Go for the money. Yeah. The money. Then I ended up going back into Wall Street again in 89 when I graduated from graduate school. Kellogg, we were ranked number one when I was there, did 2 years there. So that was
really
awesome. Yeah, I had a great journey, a great education. It was, like I said, predominantly finance, marketing management, and took another step back into the street. And then it started to change. The markets around 90, things started to change.
Right.
And then the 90s. Well, I moved back east, and I became an international bank consultant. It's pretty interesting. Traveled around, lived in Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia.
Wow.
Had a great run there. Yeah, that was interesting. A couple of years before I made my way to New York City. I made my way to New York in about, I think it was 94.
Uh-huh.
And, wow, 94 in New York City was a whole different place. I lived on 8th. Well, if anybody recalls, well, if you know the Meatpacking District today, it's way different than it was back then. I lived on 14th Street between 8th and 9th, this walk-up building above a funeral home. And back in those days, you couldn't get out of the subway without looking all around to see what the hell was going on.
It's pretty dangerous, huh?
It was interesting then.
Yeah.
You know, the markets were changing, but it was still, there was some areas. I mean, like north of 96th Street was sort of untapped area. And then in the teens, it was the West Village. But the markets, you know, since that time and all the times, and I know my real estate guys now, and we were selling buildings for $120, $150, $200 bucks a foot that now sell for $1,000 bucks a foot.
Wow.
Now, the markets have skyrocketed.
Yeah.
It's changed a lot. And there's not a – I don't think there's a market in the entire island. You know, you go up to Washington Heights. There's some great markets up there. Mm-hmm. Harlem was definitely booming in the late 90s, started to come around in 2000. So, I mean, yeah, it's a great city. I mean, I love New York.
Yeah, you love New York.
I love New York. I mean, yeah. L.A. is my home. I mean, I really am the East Coast guy turned west, so right. to speak. But New York is my second favorite city.
Yeah,
this is my favorite city.
Yeah.
And I'm going to disagree with you there, Charlotte. I'm looking outside. There's a lot of green. I know you see the hills as brown. I see canyons as brown, but I see the green.
I guess maybe that's what I mean in the canyon. But it's right. not as green as – I just meaning Santa Barbara is a lot greener than
right.
LA.
That's
a
true.
Lot greener.
That's true.
Santa Barbara is a whole different – that's a microcosm there.
Yeah.
Beautiful. But
yeah.
it's you're right. It's very different.
Yeah.
How is Wall Street in the 80s compared with the 90s?
Well, the world, Wall Street's changed, you know, technology changed a lot. I mean, when I started Wall Street, this is no bullshit. I mean, we were using a Quotron machine.
Right.
And the NASDAQ.
There was no internet at the time.
No. Yeah. And it was like we kind of, you made your own markets. I mean, we were trading, they had the pink sheets and the blue sheets. If you see that movie, The Wolf of Wall Street, we were making yeah. markets where there was a bid. Sometimes there was never a bid and an ask, right? There was a buy side and a sell side, and we would take, there were position traders, and it was, I think by the time I left Goldman, they were starting with like computer models that were doing some trading, like in options. But no, back in those days, you literally picked up the phone. I remember calling the arbitrage desk, Rich Perry. I mean, there was Richard Perry, one of the greatest guys on the street today, Perry Capital. And you were doing trades where they would have to tell you, well, you know, it's like what was going on? What was our position? So it was more challenging. It was a lot different. I remember the guy that influenced me a lot, Victor Wright. He was definitely well-known on the street back then. Victor Wright started posting trades on a blackboard. I remember him telling me the one time I had dinner with Victor up in New York. He said, hey, the world, it keeps changing. So back in the 80s, it was the go-go 80s. Everybody wanted to go to Wall Street. You come out with that finance degree. It was all about let's go to Wall Street. The markets were, I mean, they were nowhere near, what is it, 17,000 today? It wasn't even near there. A couple thousand, I think, on the Dow. It's very different.
Yeah, it was very different at the time. And then the 90s came and you had the internet started catching on and stuff.
Internet caught on. I became an internet entrepreneur. I started a company in the late 90s called theaskingprice.com. We were the first disintermediary kind of firm for real estate. I mean, I was in real estate and I was a broker in the mid-90s. And then sort of the internet started to happen. And it was all about, hey, eyeballs. It was visitors and eyeballs, which valued companies, which was very interesting because it wasn't about making money. It was about how much money can you spend to capture the eyeballs and eventually you'll make money off of them.
Yeah.
And it was about disintermediation, about getting rid of the middleman. So back then it was, well, Amazon had sort of popped and like, how do we get rid of the middleman in any industry whatsoever to make it more efficient? But really, what were you doing? I mean, we were spending, I remember spending, you were spending $30,000, $40,000 for a half-page ad in the Wall Street Journal. I was in the Wall Street Journal. I was the first, I think, guy to do business with Donald Trump. We were selling the 52 net leased units of the General Motors building.
Really?
We kind of launched our site with that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but I mean, those days, no bullshit. We built the site. I spent $250,000 to build a website that had all this functionality for people to load up their listings on their own. We had over 1,000 listings throughout the world, most of them in the United States, but I was selling properties abroad as well.
Yeah.
So it was all about how do you put people together to save the costs, but then that changed. You know, then the market collapsed, and it was really like March of 2000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's I had a net worth of over $10 million in January of 2000 within 3 months. You couldn't value the net worth. And by September of that year, I was laying – it was pretty rough. I had a company, about 15, 20 people. We're laying off every month.
Wow.
It was going straight down. And by the end of that year, values, they changed. The model went from valuing companies on visitors and eyeballs to valuing companies on if you're making money.
Mm.
We weren't making money because you gave everything away for free in the beginning, thinking you'll be able to charge. Well, that didn't work, and thousands of people, I mean, most of my friends that were the high flyers, we just crashed and burned. Oh, and wow. I ended up being like minus 50 or 60,000 on credit cards because you kind of thought, well, I'll be able to sell this. And literally ended up a year later with a website that I had like on 4 or 5 discs that was worth zero. Oh, $250,000 website went to zero.
Wow.
It was wild.
So that's it's a pretty wild ride, I guess, when you get into that kind of stuff, you know, I mean, because you never know. Things can just happen. I remember March 2000 because I remember everybody was waiting for the Y2K virus. You know, people were expecting like computers to break down and things like that, you know, for the year 2000, because they figured that something with the dates of computers is not going to accommodate the year 2000. And therefore, there's going to be like catastrophe in the world. Right. Mm-hmm. Nothing happened, of course. But 3 months later, the market fell. And that was the internet bubble, you know, bursting. And a lot of people were left
6 months. You're right. It was the Y2K. They kind of called it the computer or technological equivalent of El Nino, which is what they expected. Never happened.
Right.
It never happened. And from there, you're right. I'm telling you, in those 6 months, I remember those 6 months, those very clearly from March until September.
Yeah. 2000. That was hell for you.
It was a straight slide. It was like that slippery slope and you couldn't reverse it. There was no reversing it. And by the end of the year, I'm figuring out how do I liquidate these desks in an office, 2,500 square
foot. How depressing, huh?
It was depressing. And, you know, you sort of look at the failure and you say, wow. And then what do you do there? Fortunately, I was able to, you know, at that time, which was interesting, was to get a consulting gig after you crashed and burned. You were desired by companies that stayed alive, wanted to use your knowledge of, wait a minute, this guy crashed and burned. Let's pay him to help us not crash and burn. So I was able to quickly land some consulting gigs in 2001 and then ended up getting back into real estate again. And, well, New York is, well, changed a lot, but the technology world, then everything sort of, it settled, right? And then efficiencies occurred because there was inefficiencies. And when inefficiencies occur, that's what happens.
Yeah.
The crash occurred and then things leveled out. And the companies that were really positioned for making money, for revenues, survived. I mean, we were, but we were considered ahead of our time. We were way ahead of our time. So it was a great concept, but not ready for it. The world was not ready.
That's unfortunate. So after that, is that when you decided you're going to move to LA and start something different?
Well, what happened was, right about that time, I got back into real estate. I'd been doing real estate brokerage, then I started getting into development. Like, things started happening. I still knew a lot of people, a lot of capital. And I bought a little property. But the real impetus was I started yoga in 2005. I'd been a party boy, no doubt. I lived a pretty darn good life and slept with a lot of women, let's just say. And I wasn't really happy. I worked out all the time. I was always into fitness. I was probably 165 pounds, not to get into the weight thing. Now I'm 148. But back then it was all about just playing hard, running hard, Sparks dinners, strip clubs and all that. And then yoga, I kept reading that yoga gives you courage. And I was unhappy. I was this party guy, you know, always knew how to make money, but I wasn't really happy. I wasn't fulfilled and didn't know what that was about. And then start reading about this thing called yoga. I tried it twice before in my life. And then in 2005, I had an epiphany. I mentioned this on the show last week. I'm walking down the street. I got out of the cab. I was all banged up, loaded up from some party night, and walking in kind of a rainy November night. And I saw this little sign, the little A-frame that said, yoga, 1 week unlimited, $20. And I'm like, $20? You can't go out, you can't walk out your door in New York without spending $20. So I said, and I stood there looking at this sign, and I'm like, well, is this a sign? Like, do I got to do this? And I went up to the studio, and next thing you know, I, you know, read about that in my memoir, and then I took off. I kind of fell in love with 6 months later. I was going 5 days a week, and the studio came to me. And at the time, you know, yoga was predominantly women, definitely like not over 90% women. And they said, you know, you should be a teacher. I said, you're just, you connected with it. So then I went through that, and then I saw this real estate. I was a developer. We had award-winning properties. Yeah, it was awesome. We were taking properties in inner-city markets because at the time, in the early 90s, that's when the real estate market started to move. But I went to my partners. I remember this. I went to my partners early in, it was 2006, and I kind of felt it. Like, I had been through crashes before. I remember back at Goldman Sachs when the space shuttle blew up. I've seen markets adjust themselves a lot, correct themselves 10, 15, 20%. And I felt it coming with real estate. I don't know, you know, what was happening there, but I knew something was feeling not right. We were with the development properties. I had several properties under development. We had $5 million to play with. But I saw it coming, and I went to them, my partners, in the spring, and I said, you know, I don't know. I'm feeling something here. These properties, it's not moving like I thought. I said, if this market craps out, which I think it's going to crap out, we got to get out. We should get out before I did this with the internet. You wait too long. Like you kind of, I couldn't sell my company. The asking price, that you weren't able to sell it. Like it reached a point once March of 2000 hit, because a lot of folks, a buddy of mine sold his property, I think around Christmas time, right before Y2K, walked away with like $10 million. He had an insurance company, walked away with like 10. 6 months later, that was worth probably about $250,000, but it didn't matter. Right. I couldn't get it out. So this time around, I said, you know what? All the stars were in alignment. I had this sort of Zen energy about me, and I said, I think it's going to crash. If it does, we got to get out. And we saw it coming. We saw the wave coming. Fortunately, we were able to sell one of the properties. We had a couple in development, got out of another one, and dissolved the company. And then exactly that happened. That summer, I said, I'm going to go be a yoga teacher. I started taking acting lessons. And, you know, it's all sort of happening in 2006. And by September 1st of 2006, we had dissolved the real estate company. I was a full-time, quote, actor yoga teacher, thinking, oh, here I am. And it was about that time that my acting coach said, you know, at the time it was New York was theater and L.A. was film and TV.
Right.
And I didn't have the classical theater training, so they said to me, you know, you got to go to L.A.
Right.
And that was in the fall, and now here I am, a yoga teacher teaching. I mean, it was awesome. My friends thought I was totally crazy.
Yeah.
Lost your mind.
Totally different
crisis.
From what you did before.
Yeah, totally different. I mean, I wasn't fulfilled. Yeah, the money, I was always making money, made a lot of money, but it wasn't about that. And then when I started to get to know this concept of fulfilling your soul with yoga teachers who made no money but were happier than me. I mean, I remember we used to go out during teacher training. Shout out to Victoria. She probably remembers this if she's listening. We'd go out, sit at my favorite little sushi place, and they would always put a carafe of wine on the table for me because I went there three nights a week by myself. And I would, you know, drink. I was a big drinker. And I look around. There's like me and these eight women. They're like, Rich, did you ever notice you're the only one drinking? I'm like, no, I never noticed that. Like, because you don't notice it. I'm like, here I am. And then it started to change. I'm like, yeah. They're like, so why do you drink? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, yeah, he didn't really know. And then by the time I got through the pro, it was like everything started to change for me. I haven't had it 7 years now.
Wow.
I went through hypnotherapy for that. That's a whole different story. But when I came here, that's when I kind of fell into L.A. So I moved here February 2nd, 2007.
Mm.
So September of 06, dissolved, became that yoga teacher, started taking acting class a couple of times a week. I got into modeling. And it's like kind of interesting. I was going that route, but I didn't really even understand the industry when you first start as an actor.
Well, obviously, you come here. It's a new town. You don't know what's going on.
Don't know what's going on. But when I got here, then it was, you know, you fall in love. LA is the kind of place I think you last a couple of years or you fall in love with it. I fell in love with it.
What made you take acting classes? Because being a yoga teacher but then taking acting classes is like
Where's
completely
that
different to that.
Yeah. I was a film buff since I was a kid. I mean, I'm 51 years old, Charlotte. I mean,
look 51.
Well, thank you. I work out every single day. No doubt that preserves your body. So, no, I was a film buff in 1969 when Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid came out. That changed my world. My father, my mother, my father goes to see films all the time. So it was, I kind of had it in me. We used to watch, I remember watching a film in Princeton, Palmer Square. They were filming. We ended up stopping the first time I ever exposed a little kid. But I was intrigued by it. And I saw Westworld. There was like Day of the Dolphin, The Godfather, all these films. So I was a movie buff since a little boy. And when I was doing real estate, now check this out, this was in the 90s. I was intrigued by screenwriting, so I wrote this story called San Gennaro, because I used to go and party at the streets of San Gennaro. It was the festival. It's a 11 or 12 day festival in Little Italy in September. Mm. Everybody knows that. And I wrote this film about a real estate. It was kind of like me, you know, but I'm like, so I would be the dreamer and thinking, this is what I always wanted to do. Wasn't sure. And now I know now when you come to this town, it's like you sort of get in the river and you got to let it take you, but got to keep improving your craft. But for me, I knew it way back when, but yeah, I was groomed to be a finance guy.
Yeah.
I was a smart kid in school, studied hard. When you go to Wharton, it's all finance. We're ranked number one in the world when I was there. Then Wall Street. It's all fine. You're kind of pulled there. And it's what you know. And they call it the golden handcuffs because you're making, he's right, you make so much money. You're double, trip. I mean, when I came out of graduate school, I think I was making 250% more than the graduates that were hired for consulting. Yeah, they you make a lot of money because you're talking big transactions. You know, yeah. Big capital's moving, but you're brokers. You know, you're sort of taking a piece. And I was never fulfilled by it. I wasn't great at it, no doubt. I wasn't great. I mean, these guys around me, Richard Handler is the chairman of Jefferies. I mean, these guys are tremendous at it. I wasn't. I mean, I was always a hard worker, applied myself without a doubt. Always first one in, last one to leave. You know, you got to put your time in, but I wasn't fulfilled. And then when yoga sort of opened me up, I said, you know, if there's ever a chance, I was fortunate, you know, read about that. I had some money. I was able to save some money, a couple $100,000. And I thought, guess what? Kept reading about George Clooney. It took him 10 years to do it. I thought, well, I got enough money to last me for a good 5 years that I could just teach yoga and go to class and be great at it. And sooner or later, somebody, well, I came here and that was the plan. And I started teaching yoga. I mean, it was... Wow. It was awesome. It was a great journey. And then that's what happened. 5 years later, no, Tom Cruise wasn't calling me to be in his film. So I wrote a book called Simply Between Millions. Because that's sort of a play on words. What does that mean? It wasn't about me so much. It was I was always around people.
Right.
I mean, at Penn, I had wealthy friends. At Wall Street, wealthy friends. So the millions, there's always millions of dollars out into the universe. So I was sort of between it. Mm. And then from Wall Street to Hollywood, who takes that journey at 43 years old? I'm telling you, everybody thought I was nuts.
Yeah.
Everybody. Most of my New York people, they said, oh, here we go. Midlife crisis.
Yeah.
You're going to crash and burn again and be back here doing real estate. I'm like, no, I'm going to keep going. And
yeah.
Now here we are, what, 7 years later. And I have a show on LA Talk Radio. And I'll tell you, this is... Sam said it. Yeah, I mean, not to say that the whole the talking and the voice, but it's a niche that I like it. I like it a lot. My very first interview, check this out, in 2006, when I was just new to yoga and the act and the sort of the acting, I got interviewed by these four gals. I think it was like Long Island University that interviewed me. It was the first time I heard the All American Rejects. It was a song. It was like a womanizer song. And then they played that song because they interviewed me. They didn't really tell me what I was going to be interviewed, but they really picked on me about being the womanizer because one of their friends who I had slept with. And anyway, long story short, it was my first experience with radio. And in that room, the energy was, well, these four wild and crazy gals, but the energy was awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, this is interesting. But I wasn't ready for radio then. I'm like, well, it was radio. So your mind was like, well, I'm an actor and we had film and television. And then flash forward to Sam 2 years ago. And that's when I said, wow, this is...
So you've been thinking about it since then, huh?
I've been thinking about it probably since 2006 subconsciously.
Oh, wow.
And then when you interviewed me 2 years ago...
Right.
It was like, how do I make this happen? But again, and that's what I tell people out there. It's if you have something that's a burning desire, you got to let it keep, you know, you
got to make it happen.
Flame.
Yeah.
Yeah, you, and really, you can't give up. It doesn't matter how long it takes. Look, we're talking 2 years later. And then during that 2 years, I mean, what did I do to survive? I was a bartender. Imagine a bartender who doesn't drink.
Right.
I mean, let me tell you, you do whatever you got to do to survive. That's one of my mottos, whatever it takes. And here I am. I mean, I love it. This is something that... Hey, we'll see where it goes. But you sort of have to follow that. Like I said, you follow that river. It's a fast-moving river. Life can be. I mean, you don't want to sit around and start. If you're a dreamer, yeah, that's one thing. I encourage people to dream, but take action. I don't care if it's you want to own a flower shop. No problem. We'll start growing flowers. I'm serious. Like, start small. You got to start with one step.
Right.
My step was... Well, I got to kind of experience, 2006, but really then you gave me the bug. And I remember calling you back, and I said, Sam, if you ever need, like if Brigitte never shows up again, call me up. And
cool,
he said, I remember him saying, Rich, just have your own show. And I was like, how do I do that? You know, because your mind immediately goes to, it seems Herculean. I'm like, well, what are you talking about, have my own? Because I wasn't there yet. Mentally, I was like, well, what am I going to talk about? All the women I slept with? Well, yeah, that could go on for several months. But, you know, I'm like, you know, it was like the bad boy, the money. I'm like, no, but what's the basis? So now I have.
So you weren't ready at the time, but now is the perfect time for you. Now, so for those of you just joining us, we're speaking to Rich Tola. His website is richtola, T-O-L-A, .com, and you can find out a lot about his show, Tola Talks. It's on LA Talk Radio noon, Monday through Friday on Channel 2, and he definitely has a lot to say. He's got great guests and everything, so definitely a captivating show. If you can't catch it in the afternoon, it runs overnight. And, of course, we have the archives as well. And so Rich has been telling us he moved from Wall Street to Hollywood. Now, you said you wrote a book, too?
Wrote a book.
What's it called?
It's called Simply Between Millions, From Wall Street to Hollywood.
Okay.
Oh, that was awesome. I mean, I wrote
When did you write that?
I wrote that book. I wrote that book in, no kidding, I wrote that book in 30 days.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah, 30 days. It took me another couple of days to edit and add the appendix, which are blogs of mine. But it was August. I wrote that book in August of 2011, published it in early 2012, February. I think it was February 7th was when the book was published. Published it and then went on my own little mini tour. Went to Honolulu for 3 months, went to San Francisco for 3 months, back to New York, and I was the knocking on doors. No kidding. I was in three stores up in San Francisco. And yeah, the book was basically... it's really a story about persistence and perseverance. If you had to pick one word, I mean, it's witty, it's wild, it's got 69 chapters for a particular reason. They're really fun. They're bite-sized.
That's a lot of chapters.
Oh, yeah. There's maybe 350, 400 stories. So there's like basically my journey from when I was 3 to 43. It was like a 40-year journey, basically saying, hey, doesn't merely matter which direction you go, but my direction was, interestingly enough, since I was a little boy, like I knew I'd end up somehow in the entertainment business. It's something I always wanted to do. And and now and then I wrote the book thinking, well, I'm running out of money. Maybe the book, I can make some money, keep it going. I started a foundation, as you know, to teach yoga and domestic violence shelters. And so without money, it's pretty tough to survive, right? So the book was and then I ended up putting it on an audiobook. It's a 6.5-hour audiobook I did in 2013.
Wow.
Well, because when I got here, and that's what I encourage anybody, no matter what industry you're in, you have to keep growing, keep learning, keep challenging yourself. And that's what I said. I'm going to keep putting out content. So from 2007, I put out my first video called Yoga to Go, and then we kept going. And then it was the film came out in 2009. I had a couple videos come out. I have a yoga survival guide came out in 2010. I did a 15-minute fat burning workout video, and this was before in YouTube. You could get anything for free now.
Yeah.
Then kept going. Then I got into web series. Just you got to keep going. You got to keep evolving and growing and challenging yourself. Then the book was awesome. Wrote the book and did the tour. Then next year did, you know, just kept going. And then it's sort of like, okay, what do we do now? And then when I did that little tour, when I was in New York, it's like, I got to come back. Like, I missed L.A. I think I was gone for maybe 9 or 10 months. And I said, you know, I have to go back. And that's when I did have a publicist, like, for a couple months. And that's how I met you, Sam. I came back in August. I told
her. Then you came in because of the book.
The book. And then, you know, I came in because of the book. And then still kind of was promoting. And then I would say by the next year, 2013, it was... okay, we got this book, we got all these products. Yeah, they sell a little bit. They weren't going off the charts, but what next?
Right.
Well, that's when you got to really hunker down and create the opportunity. And that's when, I started bartending. No doubt. I got into that, knew nothing about that business. And I rocked it. I did.
Really?
Was like,
were you making pretty good money doing bartending?
You can. You can. It's interesting. Interesting business. Hey, I did a blog. I mean, I did a Get Your Shit Together podcast this year, 30 episodes. And I think number 3 was The Lost Art of Tipping. Because, hey, most people don't know how to tip.
Right.
No, you got to check that out. Because they don't. And you really have to tip your bartenders, your servers. I mean, this is an industry, folks, that people are making $8 an hour.
Yeah.
They're grinding at. What a tough business. That's the hardest I've worked in my life. Wall Street's tough. You're working 12, 14 hours a day, but you're kind of wheeling and dealing.
Right.
Real estate,
and you make a lot of money, too, usually.
Yeah, you make a lot of money. You know, but servers, if they're making all in $20 an hour, they're happy. I mean, it's tough. Bartenders, Well, I mean, check this out. I dated a bartender back in Philadelphia. This, no kidding. This is 89. She would work three nights a week. She was making $600-700 a night. Now, that was in the late 80s. Yeah. Hot blonde, kind of like you, Charlotte. Yeah. She wore the tight, you know, the bikini. There was a place on the river.
There's no problem for those to make money, you know?
No,
that's what I'm saying.
Babes,
you know what I mean?
Forget it.
When you're a hot babe, man, you don't have to work hard.
In L.A., you stand on a corner. Someone's offering you money. No, it's
Well, maybe not for long, though, okay? Maybe because you choose to work hard.
But it's a tough business. That business is rough. So if you're out there, no matter what you do, hey, the 10%, 12%, 15% tips, that's horrible. No, I mean, you got to tip 20%.
Right. That's what I do.
Tip.
Yeah.
You got to be generous. I mean, you know, somewhere in that 20% range, you're a good tip. And believe me, if you don't tip, you tip 5%, 6%, 8%, 5%, and the servers remember. They have memories like elephants.
Yeah.
When a guy comes in the bar who's a boozer, who likes to get plowed, and he's wanting you to overpour, because that's another tricky thing. Hard part is cutting people off. I mean, I remember I was one of those guys. I remember back in the New York days where we used to part. You kind of expect the bartender who's quote-unquote your friend to give you, you know, they're pouring you a shot. Well, you want the shot and a half.
Right.
Well, guess what? If you're not tipping, it's a tricky one. You're in a tough spot. Bartending and serving, rough business. You got to tip them, folks. You got to be kind.
No, I mean,
I'm waitress, so
I
feel it.
Exactly.
I know.
Oh, you
she
do,
knows.
You know.
Yeah.
If someone doesn't ever, there's one person that doesn't tip me. And I'm like, hi, he's always like, how are you? I'm like, I don't want to talk to you.
And you got to paint that smile, right? You got to paint that smile, be positive. It's tough. That's an industry where there's a negativity that swirls around. It's tough.
Yeah, yeah. It is, you know. And the thing is, though, sometimes I think about it, you know. I mean, you know, I don't mind tipping because for the reason you explained it, that they don't make a lot of money in the service industry and they rely on those. But at the same time, I always wondered about tips, because it's like, why is it the customer's responsibility to make sure you make decent money? In other words, you know, the thing is that employees get paid by the employer, not by the customers. And, you know, so that's why I always wondered about that. But, I mean, I can understand it, but you go to you go to dinner and stuff, you don't want to have to worry about these things, you know. Like,
it's a double-edged sword.
It is.
They really,
you know,
need to raise the minimum wage. I mean,
I
blogged about that. It should go to $12 up in Seattle. They raised the minimum wage.
Even in San Francisco, my son told me it's like $10.
Got to raise it, folks, because that's $2-3 difference is a big deal, because you're talking, you know, a 7-8 hour shift. I mean, still $25.
Right.
That's, you know, for a family, that's food. That's dinner. That's food.
Right. And besides, you know, I mean, people get into this line of work because they know they're going to have the tips then. So it's not, you know, so it's not so bad to go with the lower wage, because it's going to make up for it somehow.
Right.
You know, so I can understand that, you know. And I mean, the thing is that what's the difference between 15% and 20%? I mean, come on, you know, less than a dollar maybe, a couple dollars maybe when you're eating a big meal or something. There's not a big difference.
No, and so folks, here's another thing that happens, right? A lot of times you go out for lunch by yourself, the bill comes to $17.22. No kidding.
Right.
People throw the 20 down.
Right.
Throw 22 down. And what the hell is an extra two? You know what? I'm serious.
Right.
I go to the bank and get those $2 bills.
Right.
Yeah, and you throw another, because that's kind of cool. You know, when a server gets a $2 bill, what happens? They kind of save it or pass it on. I think it's good luck.
Yeah.
What's another
$2?
I mean, that's, you can't even get a coffee at Starbucks for $2. So guess what? No, I'm telling you. And at $17.23, you leave 20. That's a shitty tip. Folks,
right.
That's not a good tip.
Yeah.
Because by the time the server has to tip out, it's got to tip out the runner, the busser, there's your tipping out. You're walking away to 50% of that. So guess what? You're making $1.57 off of serving some guy who probably had to get his water refilled three times.
Right.
You know, he's asking you for this, that, and the other, and people are high maintenance. Fill my coffee. Can you give me a cup to go? Well, that's not the deal, pal. You got to pay for that. You do that all the time, you know, and it's like, come on, guys. And you're thinking to round it off to $20, forget about.
Yeah, no, that's true, you know. But it's always, you have to remember that higher wages are going to affect the economy in many ways, you know, because it raises prices and then people buy less, and it can be like a vicious circle. So that's why You know, because it seems like, you know, seemingly it's like, oh yeah, it's an elementary thing, you know. I mean, it's a slam dunk, raise the wages, you know, it's not enough and stuff. But it's not like that. You have to think about how it's going to affect other things in the economy, you know, and it could turn back and bite you in the ass as well.
I do agree. I don't think it should be raised.
Yeah, well, and yeah, it depends. Maybe a little bit, yeah. But
I agree. I do agree.
Yeah, but not to the point where they want $15 an hour. I mean, come on, for flipping hamburgers, it doesn't make sense, you know. It really doesn't. And, yeah, so I can understand this, you know, service industry, all that, pretty cool. We only have a few minutes left, Rich. Why don't you go ahead and promote your yoga, everything else that you do, the book, website, so people know where to find you.
The book's exciting. You go check me out on Amazon. I mean, for the films, there's a film out there, a couple of videos. If you're someone who doesn't work out, hey, I have 146 videos on YouTube. I mean, I put out a web series called the 5-minute fat burning workout. So I'm all about empowering people with the knowledge to work out on their own. So the videos, if you're someone who definitely wants to do a 15-minute video, that's a cool one, the 15-minute fat burning I have. If you want to learn about yoga, I go over 100 poses in my yoga survival guide. The book's in, you got to read, go see what people are saying about the book. Charmingly humorous. I mean, I definitely have a witty style to me.
Nice.
So if you want to learn about it, and you'll take a wild journey, you'll see so many industries and so many cities that I lived. So the book's exciting. And the show, hey, it's a variety show. We talk about some cool stuff. I give out an award every day called the Get Your Shit Together Award for someone who's got to get
yeah,
it together.
Yeah, pretty funny stuff.
But yeah, you can check it out. The website's got it all there. Just Google me on YouTube. Google me on the internet. Check out the YouTube. But hey, whatever you're into. But it's all about keeping you entertained and trying to inspire you to go to the next level, because I think we all could use a little inspiration.
That's true. Now, your personal life, have you been married before?
Never been married. No,
yeah,
no kids.
Not included in your story at all. No,
no
marriage there.
I never did that. I, you know, this last couple of years for me has really when everything sort of quieted.
Really?
You know, it quieted down. So now I'm ready, though. Yeah. I really am. I think I'm at a place where once the show gets rocking and rolling there, Sam,
right.
I could definitely see myself. I aspire to that now. I'd like to be a father, a husband.
Kind of an older father you're going to be.
Come on. You know what? The other day I went to get a physical. My doctor said to me, because you're going to live to 100 for sure. He goes, nobody looks like. No, I'm telling you. I keep myself. I work out every day, every single day, and I employ the principles of yoga.
Right.
Now, I'm not kind of the yoga. You know, you're not going to get me the guy that's going to be the chanting. That's not me, folks. And you check me out. Weightlifting's my first love.
Right.
Yoga is layered on top of that, the principles of yoga, about how it's all about respect for me. So it's about respect, and it's about clearing your mind, and I call it strong body, clear mind. But hey, the weights, you got to have your daily dose of iron. I believe that. So combination of them all, it's like a nice little puzzle. They all come together, and hey, there are no more anger issues. You know, I'm not throwing things against the wall. No.
Well, cool. So that helps
awesome.
You calm down.
Thing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, helps you calm down a little bit.
And the show, it's not a yoga show, guys. It's all about
exactly.
having fun. Today I have a celebrity hairstylist, John Francis Maceda. We had celebrity psychics. All sorts of peeps. Love music.
It's like a variety show
variety
type of
show.
Thing. Yeah, and with a flavor of Rich Tola. Rich Tola, everybody, check out richtola.com. The show coming on in about an hour, right?
You got it.
In about an hour on Channel 2. Don't miss it. And Rich, thank you so much for joining us. You're definitely a lot
thank
of fun.
Thank you, Charlotte, Sam.
You're welcome back anytime.
Of course.
And invite us to the birth of the child.
Yes. Yeah,
whenever that happens.
Got to find her first.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Charlotte, good luck with the car there.
Thank you.
And we'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Morning radio. Tune in to Sam in the Morning with Charlotte. Only on LA Talk Radio.